Okay, we're on Makos Beis Amud Beis, just at the top. The Mishnah gave us two examples of people that they are Edim Zomim, but they do not get the punishment they wanted to give to the victim. And the first one was where they falsely testified that the victim's parents, the father married a divorcee, that would effectively make the victim a halal. And we say that they do not become a halal. Remember? And we said it's deduced from the pasuk, because the pasuk says you do to him, but not to his children. So now that would mean the false witnesses, their children would be halals, and we don't punish the children. So therefore, we can't do that. And if we only punish the liars, it says, but you have to do to them as they intended to do to the other guy. And to the other guy, they wanted to hurt him and his children. So we can't do that. So since we can't fulfill that at all, what do? We give them lashes instead. We still don't know the source for why they get lashes. That might be coming up today if we get up to there. So that was the first case.
You know what's strange, though?
Yes?
Did you say we don't punish his children because he was a false witness, so we can't make him a halal?
Yes, yes.
But yet, on the other side of the coin, the father that marries a divorcee, nothing happens to him, but his children end up with a punishment of being a halal.
Yes, well, there's different xeris akosos.
I know, just as strange, though, how the children...
Well, that makes, that does make sense, because... I'll tell you why.
Who suffers? The children, not the father.
Well,
it's just ironic.
Well, that's the product of, you know, if a mother drinks alcohol during her whole pregnancy, the child will come out deformed. Yeah. So when you are intimate with a woman as a Kohen, you're not supposed to be, you will wreck up the kid. That's very logical. But the whole idea of Zomamim, we see, is a chiddush of the Torah. And therefore, God can construct a chiddush that he wants to. Then a rabbi wanted to give a svara, a logic, via a kal v'chomer, and we rejected that. So we have the first case of the mission. Now we're going to go to the second case, which is, may edim anu be'ish ploni. We testified a certain person, shuchayev golos. They lied and said he killed unintentionally. So we do not give the false witnesses gullus, but rather we lash them. And we're going to ask the same question, what's the source for that? Okay, because it has nothing to do with the exceptions that we learned about the halal, because the pasuk there will not apply to gullus. So we ask, minohani mili, what's the source that we do not give the edim zomamim the punishment of gullus that they wanted to give to the victim? Amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish answers, the Amar Kra, now we're going to go to a verse by Golos of killing Bishogeg, and let's take a look at the Pasuk over there. So it says, this is part of the whole context, Vasher Yavo Esrael Bayar, or someone will come with his fellow into the forest, Lachtov Eitzim, to chop wood, V'nidcha yodobar garzen, and as Machlokas, I learned this pasuk exactly, but anyway, and his hand swings the axe, lichrosa eitz, to chop the tree, v'nashal habarzel mina eitz, and the iron slips from the wood, umotzas reyob meis, and it finds his neighbor and it kills him. Okay, that's a classic case of shogeg. We'll learn in a few pages exactly what the case is, but he didn't intend on killing him. He's chopping wood. So Machlokas, is it that the metal flies off, or when he hits the wood, a chip flies off? Not important right now. I know. It's a machlokas. It's not important, but that is the case of Shogeg. What's important is the next line. Who, Yanus, Elachas Harim, he shall flee to one of the cities, Ho'ela, these cities of Refshus Vachai. Okay? So the question is, it didn't have to say who, Yanus. It could have said ve, Yanus. Remember, the word yanus, the Hebrew word yanus, the prefix yud means he will. The word yanus means he will flee. So when you say who yanus, what you really are saying, he will flee. Do you understand? The word yanus means he will flee. That's what the word means. What does the word who mean? He. So what does the words exactly translate? He will flee. So obviously the word who is extra. So what we're going to see is the Torah is, what do you call it, emphasizing who flees. He flees. And when we say it twice, he and somebody else doesn't flee. That gives us the license, because the Torah is saying, he's the one who flees. Well, why do you get it? I know he's the one who flees.
Who else can he be?
Well, who else possibly could flee? You tell me. You tell me who could possibly flee.
His family?
No. What about Adim Zomerman? Well, one thing's sure, the only guy who flees is the guy who kills unintentionally. And nobody else flees, no matter what the situation. So his children don't flee. What about an Eid Zomim who falsely lies about somebody else going to Golis? Let's let him flee. No, he doesn't flee. Only the actual guy who killed Bishogeg is the guy who flees. And that's what
the... Does he get lashes, though?
Well, wait a minute. Let's just continue. The Amar Eish Lakish, the Amar Kra. No, the Pasuk says, now we have the Pasuk I just showed you. Hu Yanus El Achasarim. He will flee to one of the cities of refuge. We can deduce from that. Who? He. The one who kills unintentionally. Velo Zomim, and not liars. They don't go. That's the logic. That's the Pasuk that gives us the exclusion. Comes along another rabbi, different than the previous rabbi, and what's he going to want to say? No, I could use a Kal V'chomer argument to show you that he will not flee. So you already see what's going to be happening here. You're already going to know what the question on that is going to be. It's pretty similar to what we had before. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Kal V'chomer, I could use an a fortiori argument. Why do I have to go to a pasuk? I can do this from logic. So let's figure out what the logic is over here. Umahu she'osa maisa b'mezid. Let's say, okay, we know if you kill unintentionally, you go to a city of refuge. Fine. What if the guy intentionally kills somebody? Let's say you deliberately kill somebody, but there's no witnesses. Let's say there are witnesses, but there's no warning. Sometimes we can just be walking and see somebody killing someone, whatever. But if a guy does a maisa b'mezid, right? But in ways we can't execute him, right? For example, without being forewarned not to kill him. What's the law to such a guy? The murderer. Does he get killed? No, we don't have all the conditions. What about going to a city of refuge?
No.
Why not? Because it wasn't unintentional. So here becomes the Kal V'chomer. If a guy who intentionally kills somebody, what's the law? A Nagola is not subject to the exile, because the exile punishment is limited to only those who kill unintentionally. But there's a guy who really killed somebody, yet does not go into city of refuge. Hain, these false witnesses that got caught before that anything happened, Shelo Asu Maise Bemezid, they didn't act get the action of Mezid done. They didn't actually kill the guy. They may have intended to, but they didn't succeed. A guy who intends to kill and succeeds, does he go to exile? No. These guys who did not act to get it done, right? Why not? The Torah considers sins that involve an action to be graver violations than those that do not involve an action. We're going to get into all of the topic. Okay, for example, what about getting lashes? We're going to see that a little bit later. When do you get lashes? If you do an action, a negative action, you eat treif. But what if you don't do an action? And we're going to discuss, remember we learned in Sanhedrin, when you just say words, that's not considered an action. Saying words is not good. That's why any of the, almost all the negative commandments that involve speech, you don't get lashed for. Because that's not considered an action. We know action is worse than non-action. Action is worse than speech. So now, and therefore we don't lash someone when transgressing a negative commandment only by verbalizing it. action is worse. So these false witnesses, did they do an action per se?
No.
What we call a halachic action?
No.
No, they just used their mouths. Okay, so they didn't actually do something intentionally. Okay, ein adin, all the more so, shelo yiglu, they should not go into exile. So you want to know why these guys who testified falsely that the guy should go into exile, why they don't get exile? Very simple. This is the A4 tier argument. If a guy kills somebody intentionally, he doesn't go to exile. So these guys who intended to kill, but all they did was their mouths, right? Then all the more so they shouldn't go into exile.
What's the Kal v'chomer?
That's the Kal v'chomer.
He gets worse than exile if he kills someone. He either gets killed or...
No, he doesn't. He does not. He does not.
Why?
He does not get killed.
If you kill somebody, you don't...
Without witnesses? Without warning? That's Hashem's business. We're talking about what we do down here. We're talking about what do judges do. Hashem's business is Hashem's business. That's not our business. He can take care of his business by himself. Hashem said if a person kills without warning, he doesn't get killed. Finished. And he certainly doesn't go to an Ir HaMikvot. He does not go to an Ir HaMikvot. Okay, so therefore...
Ir HaMikvot is the worst punishment.
That doesn't matter. I don't care what it is. The Torah says he doesn't go to an Ir HaMikvot. Finished. It's not for him. All right? So now a fellow who just tried to kill intentionally and just used his mouth certainly doesn't go to Golas. So the Gemara is going to say a similar answer we said to yesterday's argument, saying we don't apply logic to Eidim Zomimim. That's the whole point. And that's the Gemara answers. Vehino Senes is the answer now. But this very factor that you just said should cause the witnesses to be more susceptible by exile. Why? Who sha'asa ma'isa b'mezid lo legally? He, the killer, who performed a deliberate act, does not suffer exile for the intentional murder. Why not? Ki hechi delo ta'avilei kapora, because going to exile is not enough of an atonement for him. In other words, the crime is so heinous, what do you think, you're going to get off with going to the exile? Exile works, it's got to be quid pro quo. You did a shogeg, that's bad, but not that bad. Okay, so exile will be the perfect punishment to give you atonement for what you did. Okay, so why is it that the guy who killed intentionally doesn't go into Golos, if you're using logic? Well, because it is a more heinous crime. And since it's a more heinous crime, going to exile isn't going to work. In other words, we don't, in our world here, we don't have the tools to punish him. That's why it's got to be God. So therefore, since we can't execute him, we leave it up to God. Right? It is a fundamental tenet of Judah that God is just and will punish every sin, either in this world and the world to come. The judicially imposed punishment prescribed in the Torah, like exile, times for the sin, and prevents him from suffering even more severe from the hand of God. But that's only if it's b'shogeg. If it's b'mezid, we won't help him. We're causing him to suffer, but he's not going to get atoned. So that's why we don't do it, because it's not good enough of a punishment. That's why he doesn't go. But if you want to go with logic, so hein shelo aso ma'is b'mezid, these guys who didn't do an action intentionally, the false witnesses, they didn't do an action. That's what would you say is a worse crime? Actually killing the guy with your hands? Or trying to kill the guy with your mouth?
Killing.
Okay, so now we're saying the reason why the guy who kills intentionally doesn't go to Golos because it's not a good enough punishment. But if the guys only spoke and tried, which is less... They should, if you're using logic, they should be able to go into exile. So that'll be an atonement for them. So if you're playing the logic game, then the logic game would logically say they should go into Golus. Thus, the very factor, lack of action, cited by Rav Yochanan, who wanted to make it a Kal v'chomer, he's saying when the guy kills with his hands, he doesn't go into Golos. So the guy who doesn't try to kill with his hands, for sure should go to Golos. He's saying, no, it's the opposite. The reason why the guy kills with his hands is because Golos isn't good enough. But if you don't kill with your hands, maybe Golos is good enough. Therefore, maybe you'll go into Golos. So logic would not work. So it's not exactly the same way we knocked off the last one. Because the last one we were saying that Adam Zomamin doesn't work with logic. Here he's saying what you're saying over here, Regabi going into Golos, the logic won't work. And therefore, the logical answer is rejected. Therefore, what do? Elabat machvarta. We go back and we assume Kidda Reish Lakish, as Reish Lakish said, that the reason why we don't send them into Golos is because the Torah says the guy who kills unintentionally, he goes into Golos to the exclusion of others who don't actually kill unintentionally. So now we've answered both questions. Why do we say that when you falsely testify that the man was a cholel, why we don't make you a cholel? And we deduce that from the pasuk of Adim Zomamim, that you don't affect his children, but you have to give him exactly what he gave the other guy. And since we can't do it, so we cannot give him to be a cholel. And now unintentionally lying about that, we don't send him into exile because we have an exclusion from the pasuk of exile. So far, all we've been able to prove is why we don't make the false witness a cholel, and why we don't send the false witness into exile. What have we not yet proved? That we give him lashes. Where did the lashes come from? That becomes a question that the Gemara will address. Okay? You got that so far? So we're still hanging in the balance. I understand why they don't go to exile. I understand why they don't make a call. Maybe you don't do anything. The Mishnah said you'll lash him. So we're going to have to see that. Okay, question? Comments?
I'm just wondering, in the passage it's very clear in those two cases. So why do they go into all these other discussions? Like, why do these other rabbis bring up these other arguments when it's very clear there's a passage that says, Yanus, or it's very clear, or it says he. Once you have the pasuk, there's nothing more to debate.
Well, I guess he's saying you don't need the pasuk for that. Maybe we could use the pasuk for something else. Remember, you only can learn one thing from a pasuk. Maybe, Shas is big. Shas is big. You always need a pasuk. Right?
Yeah.
So he's saying, well, really, I don't need the pasuk for that if I could get this by logic. Okay, good question. Okay, now, before we do the next Gemara, I'm going to ask a general question. The general question will be answered in the context of what we're going to learn. Now, I'm surprised nobody asked this question. I'm not surprised. I didn't ask it either the first time I learned it. But what's the name of the Masechta? Makos. Right? So that's lashes. That's the name of the chapter. Yeah. Now, wouldn't it make sense that the first Mishnah would talk about lashes? Now, lashes per se has nothing to do with Adim Zomamim. I mean, you eat treif, you get lashed, right? You transgress. The rule is, if you transgress a negative commandment with action, that's the general rule, the Torah you get lashed, period. Okay? So, and then how you lash him, there's all kinds of laws of how you lash him, how many times you lash him. I mean, there's a lot to learn about lashing per se. We're learning Maseches Makos, yeah? It's called the tractate of lashes. Wouldn't it make sense that the first Mishnah would talk about the basic law of lashes instead of the back door into lashes? It's like you're starting three steps. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, there's three chapters. The first chapter talks about false witnesses. That's the theme of the first chapter, really, is false witnesses. Second chapter, the theme is exile. Well, that follows the first because one of the examples was they lied about exile. The third and last chapter talks about lashes. And the third chapter begins, Elu Hein Haloki. These are the people who get lashed. I don't understand. Why didn't we start the first chapter with that? You know, if it's called Makos, you'd expect that to work that way. Right? It would seem to make sense. Why not? That's a solid question. And only if we pay good attention to the next Gemara will we be able to figure out the answer. Now you have a shtickle answer already, because by the Gemara itself says, well, this is just continuing from the last Sanhedrin that talked about the fellow, the man who was with the Bas Kohen, and the guys were false witnesses about that. So we're following that. But that's still, that's just helps us understand why the mission was written the way it was written. But we didn't have to go that way at all. We could have just started with the idea of lashes straight away. You hear the question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So just put that on the side. And maybe if we get this all, I don't know if we're going to finish it all today, but we'll try. Maybe we'll get the answer to that. So now, apparently, if we didn't know any better and you didn't have a teacher, you figure, oh, this seems to be a new topic. But it's not. The next lines will not be a new topic. Now, the question, I'm going to tell you right now, the question that's being asked now, right away the Gemara jumps on it and the Gemara clarifies the question. So don't get too nervous if you don't understand the question. Okay. So let's see. Up to now, the Gemara has shown why the reciprocal Azama penalty cannot apply to witnesses testifying falsely about a coin's disqualification or sentence of exile. Gemara now seeks a source for the law that such Zomim and witnesses receive lashes instead. Amar Ula, says Ula, Remez le'edim Zomim min HaTorah minayim. Where is there a hint to the law of Edim Zomim from the Torah? Now, the Gemara first thinks, well, where's there a hint? Gemara says, what are you talking about? A hint? A hint is where you just get like an extra word or the word who. That's a hint. Gemara asks, what are you saying? Remez le'edim zomim. You're looking for a hint for edim zomim? Vaksiv, it says it straight out. Vasisim lo kasher zomim. You do to them as they plan. What are you asking me for a hint? Gemara says, no, that's not what we were asking. We're talking cryptically, but that's not what we were asking. Ela remez le'edim zomimim shalokin min haTorah minayin. Where's there a hint that if we can't give the edim zomimim the punishment that they're supposed to get, that they get lashed? And that's what we're looking for now, isn't that? We know why they don't go into golus. We know why they don't become a challah. But we don't know why they get lashed. The Mishnah said they get lashed. And there's nowhere in the Torah where it says it straight out, black and white, if you can't give the Edim Zomimim their punishment, they get lashed. So now we have to find a hint to it. You follow? That's what I want to know. So, Dichsiv, now, we're going to go now to an interesting place. Okay, here's the whole pasuk. Okay, if there will be a dispute between men, and they come to the court and they judge them, okay, and they exonerate the innocent one and convict the guilty one, then it will be that of the guilty one is liable to lashes, and the judge casts him down and lashes him. Now, is there anything wrong with the storyline here? If there's a dispute between men, can you give me a couple examples of disputes? Give me an example of you having a dispute with another man and you'd go to court. Can you just give me an example? Give me an example. Any example. Torah's just saying if there'll be a dispute.
Money.
He claims he owes him $100. He says, I paid him back and forth, this and that, fine. Okay, the judges listen to everyone.
There's no receipt.
Right? So now what happens? Well, they will judge them. They will exonerate the innocent one. Whoever's the innocent guy, they're going to say, well, he doesn't have to pay. And convict the guilty one. Convict the guilty one? I mean, that's not always that kind of case. And then we lash him? I mean, if you're going to want to say the guy owes you money, and then it comes out, they say he doesn't, we're going to lash you? And we're exonerating the innocent one and convicting the guilty one? That's not what it is. You just either exonerate or you convict. You don't do both. If I say you owe me money, you say not. I don't care how it ends up. Either you're going to pay me or you're not going to pay me. So either we're going to exonerate you that you don't have to pay, or we'll say you're guilty and you have to pay. But we're not going to say they exonerate the innocent one and convict the guilty one. How do you do both in a case when one man comes with another man? You don't do both. Either you exonerate, unless you're the Democrats, because, you know, even though Trump's exonerated, they still say he's the guilty one. Okay? But that's not normal. But you see how the pasuk doesn't flow? This is a stupid man. They come to God, they'll judge him, and then what should be the next line? And they'll exonerate him or say he's guilty. Or they'll do either way. And then I don't understand. And then the guilty one gets lashed? Why is the guilty one? No, you have to pay the $100. Tony, you got to pay the $100. Okay, fine. I don't agree, but okay. Oh, you're going to pay the $100 and we're going to lash you? Where is that coming from? The whole pasuk doesn't make sense. The simple reading of the pasuk doesn't make sense. You want to say you lash somebody. You say if there's somebody accused of a crime, the Bezdin looks it over. They say he's guilty and they lash him. Finished. But that's not what it's saying over here. It's saying there's a dispute. You mean you only get lashed if there's a dispute between men? How about if you eat treif? Are you going to get lashed? Yep.
Yep.
Why does that have to be a dispute between men? Usually, when there's a dispute between men, there isn't lashes.
When there's a dispute between men, it's a civil case.
That would appear to be that way. So whereas lashing does not come in civil cases, generally speaking, it's not going to come in civil cases. Do you understand the problem with the pasuk? Therefore, the pasuk cannot be understood in the literal way. That's where the hint's going to come from. That's where the hint's going to come from. But we got that clear. Now, again, look on top. Now, the word they in the phrase they exonerate would seem to be referring to judges and the terms the innocent one and the guilty one to two litigants, right? That's how I explained it. The verse discusses a case in which the judges implement judges by finding in favor of the innocent party and against the guilty one. But if so, how does the second verse follow from the first that you're going to start lashing them? So here we go. Mishum, because, what? V'hitztiku es hatzadik, they exonerate the innocent one. V'hishiu es harasha, convict the guilty one. Now, what's the next part of the pasuk say? The flow now doesn't make sense. V'hoya im bin. And now if you will be able to come up with the proper reasoning, you'll understand. Hakosa rasha, you lash the wicked one? A sentence of lashes does not generally result from disputes between two litigants, one of whom is found to be justified and the other one to be incorrect or even dishonest. These most often lead to monetary awards rather than a malchus penalty. Rather, a malchus sentence usually results from a person committing a sin between himself and God, like eating not kosher or wearing shatness. The Torah's intention was merely to teach the laws of malchus. What's the Torah trying to teach us here? Want to teach us lashes, it should have omitted mention of the exoneration of the innocent party. Just say if there's a guilty guy. You don't even have to say there's a dispute between people. The verse should thus have stated, if there will be a dispute between men, in other words, between witnesses who accuse a man of a sin and that man, that could be the dispute, and they come to the court and they, the judges, judge them, then it will be that if the guilty one is liable to lashes, that makes more sense. Right? So the pasuk doesn't seem to make sense. So we must understand the pasuk is saying something else. And the Torah is hinting the only way we're going to be able to explain this pasuk makes sense is with Adim Zomimim. If we're going to plug false witnesses into the story, now the pasuk reads like butter. Ella the case, that's what being hinted at. Rather, we got to say like this, that the pronoun they refers to witnesses rather than the judges. When it says and they, it's going to be the witnesses and the judges. What are we talking about now? Ella, Adim, what happened? We have witnesses, Shehirshu Esatzadik. They made the righteous guy wicked. They falsely said he did something. He falsely did something. He killed unintentionally, let's say. Falsely, so what do they do? This guy's a tzaddik, and now they're lying. They're calling him a rasha. Okay, that's what happened. Now a second pair of witnesses come. And what happened? They're going to show that the first pair are guilty. And when the second pair happens, then what happens? Let's take it step by step. Two witnesses come into court and say, this guy did a bad thing. He killed unintentionally. Okay, fine. And the business says, you're right. So now, you're the bad guy. Mm-hmm. You're the good guy because you brought justice. Now comes the next set of witnesses. How could you have testified about this guy? You were with us, and we accept them. So now what are we doing? Now this guy who we said was the Russia, we're going to say he's the tzaddik. And this guy who we thought was the witness was tzaddik, they now are the Russia. And now the pasuk makes sense. V'tztiku es hatzaddik. They exonerate the one who was innocent, the mikara, originally. Well, now the Bezdin will exonerate the guy who should have been exonerated. V'shavinu lahane rishoyim. And now they're going to establish these first witnesses as the guilty, wicked people. That's the case. Now that's how you're going to read the pasuk. The passage is understood. If there will be a dispute between men, who are the men? Between witnesses who testified against a man and that man. That's the dispute. The witnesses are saying he's guilty, he's saying I'm not. Who denies their charge? And they approach the court and they judge them. The witnesses and that man come to court for adjudication. The court finds the man guilty as charged. Subsequently, a second pair of witnesses comes forward and they exonerate the innocent. Now you see how the words they exact. Now you got to do two things now. Exonerate the innocent because the guy who was the victim now is the innocent guy. They testify that the first pair had been with them in a different location at the time they claimed to have been, thereby vindicating the victim and had been innocent all along, and convict the guilty. That's the pair of false witnesses. And now what's the next thing say? V'hoya imbin hakos ha-Rasha. Now we lash the Rasha. That's the only way the pasuk makes sense. So what is this pasuk hinted to us? That we lash. But what's the case of lash? Not when two people have a monetary case. That doesn't make any sense at all. A case where the judges have to exonerate the guy who should have been exonerated, and they make guilty the ones who was, and that only will play out in a case of Adim Zomamim. So that's the source. If you, and now, wait a minute. Since when do you give lashes to Adim Zomamim? Ah, in a case where you can't give them the punishment that they should have wanted to give him. That's the case, right? Then it will be that if the guilty one is liable to lashes, means that if the ordinary penalty of reciprocal punishment cannot be applied to the Zomim witnesses, right, then the judge shall cast him down and lash him. The Zomim witness shall receive Malkus. The verse cannot seem to be referring to a case in which the witnesses testified to someone's liability for Malkus, since their liability for Malkus would then follow from the general rule of Adim Zomim. You do to him as he wanted to do to them, what they want to do to him. We know that already from Adim Zomim.
Yeah. So that applies only to monetary cases then?
No. Well, it's talking in a case. No. Cases, when false witnesses come, and now what do? They falsely accuse someone of being a Russia. Now we go to court, and the court, because of the second set of witnesses, prove that the first witnesses were liars. Now what do we say? We exonerate the guy who's really innocent, and we deem a wicked the ones who are now wicked. And now what do? We lash the wicked one. So where does that play out? It plays out when people falsely swear about someone, and we can't do to them as he wanted to do to him, because we know that already from Adim Zomim, and we give them that punishment. So when we prove them to be liars in a case where we can't give that punishment to them, such as if they lied, the guy should go to exile. They lied that he's a cholol. We can't do that to them because we already learned today and yesterday, Psukim saying we can't give them the punishment. So what do you give them now? You lash him. So this whole pasuk is really a hint. That was, let's go back now to the original question.
There's a question.
One second.
Oh, yeah.
Remez le'edim zomamim. Well, no, the next line. I'm sorry. It says, Ela remez le'edim zomim shaloki minatar. We're looking for, where's the hint that an eid zomim, who we can't give him the punishment he was supposed to get, where is that hinted to in the Torah? And that's the pasuk that we brought again. Again, now let's read the pasuk completely again. Back, if there'll be a dispute between men, what's the dispute? Witnesses and the defendant. And they come to the court and they judge them. And the judgment originally, and the original judgment was the guy's guilty. But then another pair of witnesses come, and they exonerate the innocent one, and they convict the guilty one. Who's the guilty one? The false witness is. There'll be that. If the guilty one is liable to lashes, they lash him. Now, what are we saying? We're lashing false witnesses. Well, what do you know? You don't lash false witnesses. You give them what they wanted to give. We know that somewhere else. So why are we saying lashing? When you can't give them what they're supposed to get, that's when we lash them. That's the answer now. How does our Mishnah know that we lash these guys? It's from this hint. It's clearly not the Pashup Shot in the Pasuk.
But how do we know that the hint can only apply to this and not to something else altogether?
Because there's nothing else that makes sense.
Are you sure?
Where else can you exonerate one guy and make the other guy guilty at the same time?
There's no other case.
Only can do that if there were false witnesses who are saying you're guilty, we're righteous. Another pair says you're a liar, so now who we thought is righteous is guilty, who we thought was guilty is righteous. That's the only way it plays itself out. Good.
How do we even accept their testimony if we can't give them the punishment that they're trying to get to someone?
Well, because we're going to lash them.
So we can't accept the testimony.
No. Remember, even though we can't give them what they want to get, but that's what we talked about 2 days ago. Lashes is pretty bad. Okay, so now let's see if you can answer the question I started with. I asked, this is Maseches Makkos. Why didn't we start with a classic case of Makkos, eh? Right? Remember I asked that question? You have enough information to know the answer now. The answer is, where does the Torah say anywhere that you lash a person for transgressing a sin?
In this case, we just
nowhere. Except here.
Uh-huh.
This is the only source in the Torah that says you give lashes. Nowhere else in the Torah is it going to say you give lashes. Interesting. It doesn't say, for example, it would be really nice, or said, if you see a person transgressing a negative commandment, he shall be lashed. Now, that would be nice, simple, and straight. But for whatever reason, and this would be a great beginning of a Parsha class that I'd have to work on. I can't tell you why, but I can only tell you what is. The only source in the Torah for being lashed is in the context of Edim Zomamim.
So those who...
Now, we'll extrapolate. The next, there's a Pasuk right after that. We'll extrapolate from that. Maybe I'll show you what Deuteronomy 25. One second. I'm just going to forget. 1 second. 25. Okay, here it is. These are the two psukim, right? Ki yariv ben anashim. I just quoted you the pasuk, right? The controversy, blah, blah, blah. Pasuk beis, you give them lashes. Then in gimel, arboim yakem, you give them 40. You don't give them more. This is it. This is where the Torah says lashing is 40 lashes. But what's the case? Well, that's a funny worded case. I know they exonerate this guy and make this guy guilty. Like, well, what's the case? What doesn't matter? Well, it happens to be a case of Edim Zomamim. Edim Zomamim. So it's a very funny place to start. But then we'll learn later on, Pasuk Dalet says, okay, now we know that we lash people. Then they give us another negative. Lo sachsam shor bedisho. Do not muzzle the ox when he treads out the grain. And then the more later on is going to tell us, this is the prima facie example. Right after we talk about lashes, it gives us a good example of lashes. When you muzzle your animal, it's an action. You're muzzling it, and you're going to get lashed for that. We're ahead of the game. But for whatever reason, when God introduced in his Torah the novel concept of lashes, and lashes 40 was not, if you do a negative commandment, transgress, you get lashed. For whatever reason, in God's infinite wisdom, he said, the opening, the insight to lashes comes from a case that can only make sense as false witnesses. Therefore, now our question has been answered. Maseches Makkos starts with false witnesses. We ask, what does that have to do? Just tell me the straight laws. The answer is, the source of lashes comes out of a case of false witnesses. And therefore, we have to start the Masechta with false witnesses. Because if you don't start with false witnesses, I don't know lashes at all. You follow?
Yeah.
guy. And now it make not, so it's a double. So I have to start Maseches Makos where I know Makos from. Where did I know Makos from? Only by a case of, that's the opening, is Adim Zomimim. And now Adim Zomimim, now I'm going to pick Adim Zomimim that flows from the end of Maseches Sanhedrin. There was also an Adim Zomimim that doesn't get exactly the big punishment of being burnt, but rather just strangulated. So let's have an example where you don't get any of that, but you get lashed, as the Torah sources lashes through that. And that's how we understand that. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that nice, Rabbi, nice bow over there?
So yeah. When we say that those who desecrate the Shabbos get lashes, where do we get that from? Or each trade or anything?
How because that, once, well, I'll answer that. Once the Gemara told you there's a concept of lashes, then the Torah's next pasuk says, don't muzzle an animal. Now it's giving you a good example of when the general rule of lashes is. When you transgress a negative commandment with an action. Muzzle, don't muzzle. I will muzzle. I put a muzzle on an animal. That becomes the classic example of lashes. Because the example, we were, the hint was a hint. Okay, I get it's a hint. But I can't say that's going to be the classic example. Adim Zomim is the classic example. But so now the second case is don't muzzle. So whenever you do a negative, you get lashed.
Isn't it a little bit of a leap, though, to go from that to don't muzzle now?
Okay, so let's leave that. That's going to go later on. So let's just leave that for now. But right now we have very good, we understand exactly Pshat in the Mishnah why we don't give them that punishment and why they do get lashed. Perfect. Oh, yeah.